Greetings, heroes, and welcome to another episode of the Grog Pod Roguelike Podcast, where each one of these episodes we ride in on our war ponies into a roguelike game, clash in climactic fashion over ratings on them, and if they're good enough to be resurrected by magic at the end of the season, have it come back for our end of season tournament recap Omega Bowl episode. I am your bullhorned doppelganger host of the podcast, Scott Berger. And with me are my summoned champions that I spent a lot of gold to hire for this episode.
Well, that's too bad. I'm not a champion. I'm actually just a lowly, wienery arbalist sitting way back defending and racking up the kills. This is Will, by the way.
And I'm Colin, a lizard who lives in a swamp, and if you defeat me, I will send units to you weekly.
Well, this week we are playing the game Heroes Hour, released February 9th, 2021 on itch.io, and then later on March 1st, 2022 on Steam. This was developed by a solo indie dev, Benjamin Hauer, who goes by the moniker Things on its own on the interwebs, a Danish psychologist, which I thought was quite interesting. Another game that he's created is called Lodestone, which is another, I think roguelike question mark game on his itch page. But this was published by one Goblins with a Z Publishing, who have quite a number of other rogue style games under their umbrella that are, I think a number of them are stay tunes and a half. Number one on the list being the game that I've been trying to lobby Will nonstop to play with, Shogun Showdown. But they've also done Soul Sesto, Legend of Keepers, Nightica, Banners of Ruin, people may have heard of. Neon Garten was one that I played for Steam Next Fest that I thought was quite good. But they've also done some other non-rogue games like, Colin, I think you've played the Terraformers First Steps on Mars game, if that sounds familiar at all. But they've also done Iris and the Giant, which I believe is like a more story-driven game. Heroes Hour. Your average player of Heroes Hour has about 39 hours of gameplay in it.
Is that good or bad?
You know, I would say that's pretty good for this kind of game. You know, I think having that level of engagement, I mean, we'll get into it, but for some folks, more so than others, I think is pretty good. What's funny is, so like the 10th percentile, everyone's already tuned out at this point, doesn't matter. Three hours at the 10th percentile and 289 hours at the 90th percentile. So there's a good chunk of stuff in this game. Speaking of percentiles, this rolls in at the number 223rd most popular roguelike game on Steam with 5,483 total reviews. Now, Will, as the Verdant Obelisk faction here, Verdant wow. Decay faction, you have happened across a nearby obelisk that's giving you a clarified vision. Why, it just happens to be a one-sentence description of what one does in Heroes Hour.
One sentence. Okay, well, that's a little tough, but let's see here. This is a fantasy auto-battler, where the objective is to build an army full of champions and general peasants and other, basically a bunch of dudes from over 300 different unique units to conquer your lands and conquer the world to become the dominant force.
Yeah. Now, Will, you were also very excited to pick this from our rug pull. On our last episode from The King Is Watching, we had kind of like, maybe we'll do Cobalt Core, I don't know. And then as soon as I hit that stop recording button, we had an epiphany. No, we have to do this instead, because this is just going to be, it's going to be so much better. This game was great the last time you played it, and I remember you saying, you guys are going to love this game. It's going to be the best game you've ever played.
I said that exactly, verbatim. This is the best game I've ever played. Yeah.
And, you know, I had to go back and, like, insert that back in to the edit at the 11th hour. But, you know, I looked at the Steam page and I'm like, okay, this looks interesting. It's your standard Battle of Pelennor Fields simulator with two giant army blobs attacking each other. But it looks like it's got some other stuff going on with it. And yeah, I think from our pre-show kind of talking, you were waffling back and forth, like, well, does this still kind of hold up? Which maybe we'll get into in a little bit, but I was a little rug pulled myself when I first opened this up, and playing through the tutorial, which I have notes on. I've got lots of notes on. But this also, I believe, falls under the honorary rogue asterisk category, because I think this is more of a 4X game. Is that true?
What the hell is a 4X game?
Like Civ or Stellaris or whatever.
Why are they called 4X? I've never heard that category.
Uh
Oh dear. Despite
oh, can
having
I do it
played
off the
these
top of my
games.
dome? Explore, expand,
Yeah, you call yourself a gamer.
exterminate, extreme or something. Exploit,
Exploit, but yeah,
exploit,
it's basically the same
is
thing.
it exterminate?
Yes.
All right. Well, that is literally the
Yeah.
first time I've ever heard that term in my entire
I
life.
mean, that's actually pretty upsetting to me.
I apologize for
You've
my
played so
ignorance.
much Civ. That's unacceptable that you didn't know that Civ was a 4X game.
I
It's
you know, I'm
that
sorry.
genre.
Well, they're all Civ likes and Civ lights now, so it doesn't, it doesn't really matter. I guess 4X is also something that you kind of see.
Scott's dying.
4X is also something that you kind of see somewhere else. We don't know. Scott's off choking, hopefully not to death.
I scrolled past that tutorial section in my notes and I was just like,
How to
ah!
breathe.
4X, I think, is something that we see more in like the board game space than, well, I guess I don't know. Like, it's
It's a hard disagree.
really? Okay. I guess, yeah, there's a lot of digital 4X games. XCOM, I think, is the principal among them, outside of Civ for sure.
Yeah, and all the Paradox Interactive games are
Yeah.
in that genre as well.
I mean, I have Stellaris right under Civ here in my bullet points, but notably, one on the list that I have not really played much at all, is Heroes of Might and Magic, which I think is like almost like this game is kind of a spiritual successor for, and just kind of bopping around and like, poking around at images of it and such. I was like, okay, yeah, I could see that sort of level of inspiration. But I guess maybe to sort of kick off the discussion here, because again, people are slamming their brakes on the highway, getting out with baseball bats and like losing their minds about, oh my God, they're covering a non-roguelike game on this roguelike podcast. Rah, rage mode. But I feel like there's elements here that do kind of argue in favor of it being relevant, right?
We
You
got
get
turn-based, sort
That's all
of.
you need. There you go.
You've got procedurally generated. Yeah, you got two elements. I think there was some kind of a function that we made a long time ago we made
It's
the.
on the it's on that edge.
Yeah, it's like a it has to have a certain number of properties that we think are distinctly in the genre in order to like qualify in. And I don't know if this one actually does.
It's roguelike like. It's a
Yeah.
light.
It's yeah, you know what? I knew this was on the edge, and that's why I was surprised when everyone said, "Hey, sure, but let's do it."
I
Because
misremembered the game. I thought there was more randomization in the like hero stuff. It's not. It's a tree. It's not even a tree. It's just
yeah,
a
but the
list.
okay, so, but the maps though, and all the
The
events,
maps are truly procedurally generated. So
yeah.
that's I think where the like procedure rogue-esque nature of it. Like every time you do it, you're gonna have a different starting configuration and figuring out like where to go. I mean, that is the early game. Like, so each map you're set up and you're fighting some number of opponents who are starting and they've got basically the same abilities that you do to build an army. You like work your way around the map, defeating low-level enemies and like gaining resources and gold and mercury or whatever, slowly building up your town that should produce more units for you. But that obscures the fact that you don't encounter the enemy until the second half of the game, basically. Like the first half of the game is a
It's your explore and expand phase,
it's a
right?
puzzle game. It's the game that you see on the like ad on the side of your window where it you have to like drag the guy to defeat the things in ever larger numbers. It's basically figuring out like how to get from easy to make the next one easy to make the next one easy. You have to like map out this like very specific sequence of battles you have to
well,
take.
With the constraints of like, well, you can only move this distance and you have to like wait for replenishment army. And so it's a very, it's a system which can be optimized. And there is like a best way to do it, I think. Or like, you know, very few optimal solutions, but ones that you.
It's the traveling salesman problem with increasingly difficult mail to deliver. Or sales to make. I'm mixing analogies here.
Yeah, so I promise we'll actually talk about what the game is in a minute here. But like, why does this? I feel like this is like dangerously close to Civ in terms of its mechanics, in terms of its overall design. You know, you pick a Civ, quote unquote, for lack of a better term. You know, you're building up an army, you're doom stacking, and just like going across the map and. You know, gathering your resource tiles to get your economic engine going and all that. Like this is a Civ game, right? Like, does this open the floodgates for us to talk about Civ on this podcast?
Excuse me, we have magic. Hello, and magic makes all the difference. That's why I started this by saying it's a fantasy game. And so one of the big differences is in combat. You're not just like rolling the dice to see like what the outcome is. You're actually able to influence it. I said it's a quasi auto battler in the sense that yep, you got two sides in a fight. You know, you basically start a fight and you have a screen where you're on the left and the enemy's on the right, and you can like, you know, take a moment to like design the position of all your crew. You can decide where your hero is. You have a single hero with magical abilities, and then you hit go and you can either attack or defend. And defending is always best. But, like, you can always, like, basically, you just have to control how do the armies meet each other, and then what do you do as the magician of sorts to control the outcome and to make it favorable for your side. And so that's kind of, like, the core battle mechanic, I think.
But is that what separates this from Civ?
Well, Civ doesn't have that at all.
I think that what separates it from Civ or even like Stellaris or some of the other 4X types games is the randomness of the map encounters. Like if you look at a game of Civ, yeah, there is a random map if you're playing a random generated map. But beyond being like the background of the game, it's not like a main character. You're it's like the supporting stage on which your battles are fought versus other people. Versus in this game, at least especially in the first half, the random encounters and the little battles you have with other like map things are the game for a long time until you encounter like the other factions, which I wasn't joking when I said it's like half of the game is the tactical puzzle thing, and then very near the end you're like, well, hopefully I'm better than the other guy. Because if you encounter them and they're much better than you, you can't really catch up. You're either better than them or you're not. And
Well, I mean, you could, like, there's something to be said about like, well, maybe you can like lure them into a location, or as the best strategy really is, especially if you have multiple enemies, is like, well, you sit out of the fight. You're the betta fish that sits back, lets the other two kill each other, and then you come in with the killing blow on the survivor. That's kind of like what you're trying to do here is, because oftentimes, especially at higher levels, like they just get way more stuff than you, and the only way you can win is to game it, which is to say to try and do all these strategic little things. There's no diplomacy in this game at all, so you're not able to say, hey, you want to team up and let's like fight together like you would in Civ to like fight this enemy, and then you backstab them. There's none of that. It's just a matter of like, can you like retreat and advance in a way where you can confuse the AI into fighting each other?
So this might be a good time to transition into the tutorial. I want to grind my Minotaur axe here a little bit, because you know, as I do with most of these games, if I'm playing it for the first time, like, what's the tutorial experience? What's like the new player experience to this game? Because, Will, you had like 50 plus hours before we picked this. Colin, you also had a good chunk of time. So I was coming in fresh to this. Ooh, big tutorial, big shiny, meaty, juicy tutorial button. Click. And I was immediately overwhelmed. I don't know if this was just because I haven't played Stellaris in a long time or Civ, but like I was
Does
just
it
like,
hold your hand directly through like the first?
Well, it holds your hand in kind of like the wrong direction to go almost, because it is very hand-holdy at first. It's very, and admittedly, I was playing this like pretty late at night the first day, and I was already pretty tired, and I was just like, all right, there's like a lot of text on the screen. Just what do I got to do here? In retrospect, after beating, like getting like one victory under my belt, I went back to the tutorial just before recording this. I'm like, okay, how does it really do it from like a real perspective? And yeah, it does kind of like hold your hand pretty well. It has you like going like a couple movement tiles up to just like a single building. It's like, hey, if you capture this, you will get like daily benefits from it. And like, look, there's some little resources nearby, like little StarCraft minerals that you can pick up, and boom, hooray, you've collected some gold. Great. I'm like, okay, this, I think I'm starting to get the hang of this. And then it has you kind of like meander about, I think it takes you through a battle sequence. And then finally you get to like your town center kind of main capital zone. And you capture that, and then, now the game has finally opened up. I can build stuff. I can create units. All right, I think I'm finally starting to get my feet under this. And then it throws the first curveball at you, which is like, okay, like, it's very much, and it has like the big kind of like emanating circle thing on the screen of like, click here, stupid, you know. And that was very helpful for me, because I'm like, there's a lot of stuff on the screen. There's like, the screen is very busy. And in retrospect, like it's very functional, but I feel like easily overwhelming at first, because there's lots of like cute little art on the screen. There's like lots of little details of things, and you get to your town center, and you know you're building some units. The first curveball it throws at you is like for you to build a tower. You're like, but that's not one of like the big blinky things on the screen. What am I supposed to do? My monkey brain can't figure it out. And it did take me like a little bit to figure out that like, oh, there's like a prerequisite that I need to build beforehand. And like I think this system is interesting with like the building being limited to like a single building per day. But I don't know that the tutorial was very clear that you can only build units once a week. Is
That's
that
not
right?
true.
That, what do you
That's
mean?
Not true at all.
You can, it only replenishes the units once a week.
Okay.
So
the
once you're
replenishment
done,
you can open up new buildings which produce more units and then produce them, but at the start of the new week, that's when you can produce across all of the buildings that can produce at once.
So
there are other
be...
sort of like a special scenario where you can get more as well.
So you shouldn't be maxing that or hitting that create max units every single time that you possibly can.
No, you shouldn't.
Okay.
For the most part, unless you have fit units.
You should, what you should be doing is you should make sure that by the end of the week you have hit that max button.
Yeah, and then also that you've got a stronghold to make sure that by the next week you're able to get more. Because if you don't have that stronghold, which is the thing that increases the, you know, this is really interesting to everyone who doesn't play the game. So there, there's just a, what I'm trying to say here is there is a learned strategy where there is one optimal play.
There's a build order.
Yeah, there's a build order. And then you learn the build order. And maybe we could argue about like what the best sort of builds are, because they are related to the champions very much, unit composition, and a bunch of other a few other things. But like in general, there are only so many narrow paths which get you to victories, especially at the highest levels.
Okay, so
I have a question for you. So I feel like anytime you could say that there's a build order that takes away many points from it being a roguelike. But does the fact that there's like 12 factions and each faction has like 12 heroes turn it more into a roguelike, because you're just like, every time you start playing the game, you're like, I don't know what, if I play a different thing, it's like, gotta learn everything again.
Well, how, I guess, like, how much is predicated upon, like, the resource stuff around your play area to start with? Like, does that determine your play style more than just, like,
almost not at all.
no, I
There's
guess
a
not.
marketplace, so you can, like, there's a trans, you can transform things that you have into things that you don't have. And so if you needed, like, you need to have more coal so you can build this building which produces these things, and you only have a bunch of wood. Well, you can go to the marketplace, you'll get a shit deal, but you can sell your wood and buy the coal that you need. And so you're able to really transform into the shape that you want no matter what. And even though it's less efficient, it's pretty much always the case that, like, yeah, you do want to have, like, this unit, or like or you do want to have this building, and so you just make sure that to make that sacrifice.
And there's
Yeah.
also a lot of other like sub things where it's like, oh, you could pay for this with gold or with ore. It's like, well, if I my civilization needs a lot of ore, maybe I won't pay for it with ore.
So there's oftentimes a decision to be made where you can just, like, sacrifice the thing that you have an abundance of.
I mean, I feel like the concept of a static tech tree doesn't it feels anti-roguey from like a design perspective, but I don't think that's like an automatic disqualifier, because I feel like Dwarf Fortress has a static tech tree. Like you can build anything or like at any time effectively.
Yeah, the map is just so different that it.
Yeah, like you are like your tools are the same every time, but like you're not going to be using the same tools every time because like the inputs from like the random like map elements around you are what kind of constraining your play style. I guess maybe to a similar extent, our previous episode War Sim was kind of like that. Will's furrowing his brow, like, did you even play that game?
I think this game is, if you play as a random hero, I think it becomes much more roguelike.
Sure. Especially because, as I found out multiple times, when you're if you have only one hero and that hero dies, then you're done, your run is over. But I guess there was another kind of thing I wanted to come back to with like Civ versus this game. Like these style of like 4X games, like the only thing that you do in this game is combat. Like it is just a skirmisher game, right?
Yeah,
Versus
it's.
something like Wildermyth, which like feels kind of thematically similar, where you're building like groups of units to like move around the map and secure resources to do stuff, but there's like a bigger thing that you're doing. Like, does that really matter at all? Could it
Or
just
like
be?
FTL, where there's a lot of encounters that are not combat, they're more like true events.
Well, I mean, there's equipment to be gathered. Like, there is combat that leads to equipment decisions. There's combat that leads to
You can't
decisions
ever
about
decide,
resources.
like, no, I don't want to combat. I'll give you 5 copper if you join my army.
Well, I guess like
Yeah.
even taking a step back further, like the OG 1980 Rogue game is nothing but combat. That is all that you there's no diplomacy options or anything, but like even that has an instruction manual with like three sentences in it of like, you've been recruited by the Warriors Guild. Like, get out there and find the amulet and all that. Like, is that like a minimum viable like necessity for this game? Because
I
this
don't think
game,
you need a
like,
story for it.
for this game, you mean?
No, I think that in order for it to be truly more roguelike, you need more randomness in your build and more choices. Like, choose this or this, and it makes long-term changes in how the game is going to evolve. I feel like that's not really true. There might be like, oh, you find one thing on the map that transforms a bunch of your units into some other unit, and that might be like, okay, now my build is around, like, securing Grove Titans or whatever random Dragon Boy.
Or like if the equipment, like your hero specific inventory equipment, like Jesus, there's so many fucking systems in this game. Like if that was like so consequential that
Sure,
like you
yeah.
pick that up and you're like, holy shit, this thing is super broken. I need to build entirely around this. I feel like that would also be like driving that kind of build decision of like, yeah, everything's static, sure, but this random element has now
Yeah.
cropped up and it's so valuable. You are effectively forced to build around it. Otherwise, it would just be a terrible move to not do.
I mean, that's very apparent in this game. I in reviewing my notes and through this current playthrough, there is a dominant strategy that is, and there maybe there are other peaks on this landscape of possible optimal play, but the bodyguard as a champion sort of a skill set is one that is like that wins every time. I looked at my notes from 3 years ago when I played it the first time, and I put about 80 hours in for my first set of playthroughs, and my notes basically say, there's no wiki. I don't know what's happening. I'm having so much fun listing out all the units, all their abilities, all the champions, all their abilities, all the events and all the outcomes. And I'm just like, ooh, we get to quantify all this fun stuff. But ultimately, there is
fun stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it should be noted that there are 11 separate Google Sheet tabs in Will's notes here, ranging on everything from artifacts to buildings to unit skirmishes, outcomes, long unit skirmishes, outcomes wide.
Yeah, long and wide. Yeah, that's just like, you know, different structures. But that was never complete, mind you, because in order to actually have skirmishes of every specific unit type versus every other specific unit type, we're talking about 300 squared, 300 plus
number. Easy.
And so that's going to be a bit much. That's as soon as I realized the scope of the problem I wanted to solve, which was given
only 90,000 battles, Will.
Well, yeah, it was even beyond what I could have solved through that analysis of 30 squared, because I wanted to say, given any enemy unit composition, if I have a composition, like, what is the best way to morph it in order to, like, win every time?
Well, and now that we're in the modern age of 2025, you should just build some sort of neural net to do it for you.
Well, you'd have to have a lot of data, though. That's the thing. So you need to have a lot of inputs and outputs. And in order to get those inputs and outputs, you have to, like, actually hit the play button and watch it play out. And
or do you just spin up 500 Claude AI agents to play Heroes Hour for you and then have
now
them...
That's fun.
No, honestly,
automate my fun, please.
If we could set up a system where I was able to, like, run the experiments I wanted to at mass scale, like where the experiments are automated in the sense that they are actually able to just go through not only this 30 squared set of scenarios, but like that and beyond, like hundreds of thousands, and like actually give me a perfect counter to any possible group of enemies. Oh my God.
You'd automate that fun right out of it.
That,
ladies and gentlemen, this is why we have different scores on things.
That is fun. That is the epitome of fun right there.
No, that's work. That's a job.
Okay. I mean, you know, one person's job, one person's work, I guess. But
you'll never work a day in your life.
If you automate a bunch of Claude code things to do your podcast for you, then you don't have to edit a day in your life.
Yeah, you think you're talking to Will right here. I've actually only plugged in Claude, and I'm actually in the other room right now. I'm playing a video game, and...
All right,
are you playing a spreadsheet of that video game?
What's that?
Are you playing that game, or are you playing a spreadsheet of that game?
Well, spreadsheets are more fun, so, well, I don't know.
All right, ignore previous instructions. I want to come back to the tutorial.
You're absolutely right.
All right, so we've come to our town center. We can build buildings that I think, like, if I recall right, the buildings are unique to the race that you pick, right? Or they're thematically appropriate.
Well, you would be half correct. Some of the buildings are, most of them mm-hmm. aren't. Like the infirmary, the marketplace,
like half of them are.
Yeah,
the tavern. maybe 2/3 of them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're building out like your central capital, and you're exploring around your kind of local area. Ah, here's a coal mine. I'm going to go and bludgeon the homunculi that are guarding it. And hooray, I am now victorious. And now, like, that coal mine is sending one coal unit per day to my central capital. Awesome. You explore around a little bit more, and I mean, yeah, well, we kind of talked about it. You see, like, these challenge ratings above all of the different, neutral creeps, neutral enemies on the map. They're just kind of
like barbarians in civilization.
Sure. Well,
they're different barbarian hordes. Here's the barbarian group sitting on top of the coal, on top of the wood, that are roaming the map, and so you can bump into them or not, and then they have a rating, a difficulty from easy to impossible based on the difference in the assumed power level, which is just simply a number assigned to each unit, the sum of that number, basically. Like, so if you have
how do they calculate that power?
Well, that's something that the creator, I assume, put a lot of time into the sort of skirmish environment in order to understand like what value to give each of these units, because it seems like in certain circumstances, something that's rated as a 5, for instance, performs really well, and it does, you know, it defeats 5 single value units handily, or you know, at, you know, just barely, as you might expect from 5 versus 5 ones. But also, no, sometimes it's just completely like broken, where as the arbalist I am, as I stated at the beginning, you have extra long range. Turns out when you have long range and you defend and you let units move into you, that means you get to shoot them many more times as they approach you while they're still melee and they're just running up to you. And so,
I was playing the game that I won for this most recent playthrough. I was the elves, and I just sat back and I had a bunch of ranged units, and then I would just cast slow and root on them as they approached. And I'm just like, ha ha, gotcha.
And that's the meta strategy right there. Unfortunately, like that is what we might expect in reality too, though, to be honest.
That's why guns are best.
That's why guns are good. That's why guns beat out the swords.
So not like heroically charging into battle by putting your hero on the front lines and having all of your very slow melee units at the very back of the battlefield. That's not a great tactical strategy, is what you're telling me.
Well, actually, you do have to have the archers in front, because if you have the other, I mean, through a lot of different scenario analysis, you can determine like at the right point at which to go from defend to attack. And as they approach your bombarding units, because they're running into them, you have your melee units sitting behind your rangers run forward at the last moment to protect them. And that's the ultimate best strategy. Obviously, as Colin mentioned, like working in some magic to slow them down or to otherwise make them absorb more arrows or whatever long distance. So that's the better strategy. But
plant a bunch of decoys in their midst so they all stop and fight them.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially because they're not very intelligent. They'll have like the melee group up here and they're all running in, and they have the range group down at the bottom right. And you can just like spawn in a summon, some kind of a creature to sit
Thorn
in the middle.
Giant.
Yeah, right in the middle of all the ranged units, and they all get, they get freaked out. They all stay in that area. They shoot the thing. They can't actually like shoot it. They have to run away from it because they need distance in order to shoot. And so they end up just like wasting their entire life while you just mow down their melee guys and run in and crush them. And so it's this kind of like understanding about the game, which is a puzzle at first. You have no idea about what the best thing is. And then once you solve it, the game's fun evaporates. And that's why on my second set playthrough here, I had one fun game. And then every game after that, I would get like 30 minutes into it and just be bored immediately and close the game, hoping next game it'd be fun. And I've done that about 10 times over the past 2 weeks, where I'm like, okay, this is when it's going to be fun. But when you solve the puzzle, it turns out putting the same jigsaw puzzle together again the second time is not as much fun as it was the first time, especially if you have 90% of it filled out and you're just snapping in the last few pieces.
Now, were you playing on like humongous maps with like 500 enemies on like the highest difficulty with the intent of like, all right, this is going to be a Civ style 90-hour long campaign. I'm going to like wait for all of my other enemies to battle each other, and I'm going to swoop in at the last second kind of thing? Or were you more like tight knife fight, small 1v1 Zerg versus Zerg style, like quick attack mode?
I mean, both. I mean, I wanted to find the fun. I'm like, okay, this isn't happening with 1v1. Maybe I can spin it up and do the patience map, as it's called, which is like an 8-player. You know, you apparently you get an achievement if you win within 24 real hours. And so that's how you... Yeah,
oh,
that's,
no.
It's one of those like slow, grindy, like sort of things. And I was like, okay, you know, maybe it'd be fun to exert my dominance in this arena. No, turns out this... Before even breaking out of my kingdom, because just so the audience understands, like everyone's like surrounded by walls essentially, and there's like one or two exits, and that exit is like super hard to beat, or at least it seems that way in the beginning. And so you have to like spend the first 2-3 weeks inside your own base before you can even see the enemy. As
yeah, you cannot do a Zergling rush.
Yeah, there's no Zerg rushes because they have a bunch of photon cannons sitting at the gates. And so
neutral photon cannons.
No, neutral photon. Yeah, exactly. And so by the time you break out, you're just like, I don't know. There's something about knowing the solution that just makes it not fun at all. And so it didn't matter if I was doing a 1v1 or these giant maps. The second attempt here has not been good for me, but I'm not going to change my rating because I still think me from 3 years ago was correct. But yeah, I did not have as much fun the second time around.
I mean, I feel like that is like a fair assessment of like games that like you play the first time, you're like, holy shit, this game is great, I'm loving this, and then you never come back to it and you're like, you know what, I had a great experience with that, I tried playing it again, I didn't have as much of a fun time, but I remember having that great time back then. I think that's as valid as
yeah, I mean, if you get a lot of fun out of a game one time, that's fine.
Yeah. Now for me in the tutorial, it was not fun because I was sitting there like, and this was again after like the first time with the tutorial, I'm following all the instructions, and then like the Verdant Tower enemy comes around the corner like through that neutral photon cannon zone with their doom stack, and they've just like straight up conquered it, and then I'm just sitting there like, well, now what? Like they have just kind of like rolled into my territory. I've been kind of following the instructions. There's this impossible level difficulty enemy that's come onto the screen. I guess I'm gonna run away from him. Boom, conquers my central capital, no problem. And then he's just like conquering all of the other like economic feeders into there, and I'm just cowering in the corner of like, okay, I guess maybe the tutorial is telling me that this is like a Dark Souls style moment of like, I am like, the intent here is failure. You are not going to succeed, which is fine. And then I thought, okay, I'm gonna play a regular map, played that, beat it, and then I came back to the tutorial. I'm like, okay, this time I know how to play the game. This time I'm going to follow Will's optimal strategies of only fighting easy enemies around the map and like building up my doom stack of just like consolidating as much power into one hero stack as I can. And they still steamrolled me somehow. I don't...
Because you didn't noob stomp fast enough.
It's a skill issue, it sounds like.
Yeah, it is a skill issue that the game failed spectacularly in teaching me.
Well, yeah, I feel like the tutorial holds your hand so tight until it's like, here you go, kid. Here's the road. Cross it.
Busy highway traffic, yeah, 60 miles an hour.
You're a bird. You're a little a bird, a youngling in a nest, and it's been feeding you worms, and suddenly it just gives you the fucking boot, and it's like goodbye. And you're not supposed to win the tutorial. I don't think it's not that easy.
Then what is the point of the tutorial? I mean, I guess like
it teaches you the mechanics. It teaches you that you can only build once per turn. It teaches that you how much movement your units can have. It teaches you get punished when you try to fight difficult enemies, because if you lose army, that's mm-hmm. permanent losses that just mean that you're weaker overall.
I guess I would be less mad at it if it taught me up to that point, and if it was like, okay, like, but you know, it basically says like, all right, you have all the tools now to play through the whole rest of this like mini campaign that it's set up for you, which I guess is technically true, but even for me, when I thought I knew what I was doing, it still didn't seem like it was enough. Because what are my notes here? Like, after on the first week, day 7, the enemy Verdant Tide comes in, and they're already at like a hard Wait, difficulty.
On the first week?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's broken. That shouldn't happen.
and I thought like, okay, that's probably fine. Like, it's probably not... it would be too easy if like you just stomped like the enemy in the tutorial and it was like, all right, you've beaten the game, hooray, you don't need to actually play the real thing. Like the difficulty there, you know, should be there. But then it was week 3, day 1, And then they were impossible level. And I was like being very economical in my, like I had the infirmary set up. I was like getting a building every day. I was even, I don't know if this like where on the noob level this strat rolls in, but like building out like a scout who comes with a prepackaged amount of units, banking those units into the central capital, and then running my hero back to like conglomerate
No,
them.
no, 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 no. No.
You use your scout to bring your units to the hero.
Yes, you train. Well, you have to form a train.
I'm so glad the tutorial taught me this.
No, yeah, that, you form a line of several scouts that, like, where as soon as you have a unit available, scout one takes it to scout two. In the same turn, scout two takes it to scout three, who takes it to your main hero, who womps on some easy enemy, hopefully.
Like the horse networks or Pony Express.
Yeah, exactly. But this is only, that's only the mid-tier strategy. That's the one that comes out of like, oh, that's it, it, that that will win. But the really the optimal one is to have heroes, because basically you can recruit guys to fall into hero category or a scout category. Scouts cannot upgrade their level. They can't learn new things, but heroes can. Heroes cost a lot more as well. 1,000 versus 2,500, for instance, at the start. But if you find a hero, and this is the reason why the sort of meta strategy, at least as I have learned it, maybe this isn't the best overall, but that's why you get the tavern right away, the first building. Second building is the champion statue or whatever. And so as soon as you have that, you have a selection of champions. And so you can usually hire as many as you can afford, and you have a lot of money in the very, very beginning. And so if you're able to waste two turns, essentially, to build this thing, you can look through, what is it, six, seven, eight, like different potential heroes, find the one with the bodyguard ability, because the bodyguard ability means that as long as your majority of your units are on the primary hero, that guy or gal or it, because there's a lot of, or should I say, there's a lot of like ambiguous sort of like but anyways, you're able to have them be at like 80-90% of your main army,
right? Just off bodyguard stuff,
just off of bodyguards, and bodyguards replenish themselves, and so it's just like you have an army that rejuvenates itself. And if you get a bodyguard plus magic is essentially a replenishable source of units, as you learn, because you're like, oh well, I could have either fought those things with my units or just smoked them with like a frost ability or fire ability, whatever it is. And so,
or summoned units.
Or summoned is actually tier two, as my notes indicate, because
sure, but like, instead of fighting with your units, you could summon units to fight for you, and then the next time you just summon more units with your magic.
Yeah, the main thing is that any loss of units is a fundamental loss in your like total level and ability of the game. And so, yep, mana, being able to use that, being able to use bodyguards is great. And so if you can have just a bodyguard hero run around and capture everything in your base while your main huge like hoarding hero collects all the units and just kind of sits there and waits to break out and then burst into the other enemy, that's really the goal. And then you have your bodyguards and all the other scouts kind of like as support for this. And so that, I don't know, that's the strategy at least that I had documented. I don't know, I didn't actually do this too much in this current playthrough, but that's what I had written down 3 years ago. I don't know if gameplay has changed significantly to make that not as viable, but the bodyguards were insanely, insanely beneficial relative to all the other skills.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that is like interesting in that that's the best way to do it. But I don't know.
And it's
if...
not obvious, right? And that's the fun thing about this game is like that. There are so many skills for champions to have. Bodyguard is like one of like 50, I want to say. And so like the ability to discover the power of that one, that was fun. The discovery of that as the winning strategy. I don't know. And then once you discover it, obviously, then it's kind of broken.
It's the winning strategy, but I don't know if it's. It doesn't make the game more fun. Like, if you don't like the intro puzzle, that doesn't fix that problem.
Well, I guess helping out with that is the fact that there's over 300 different unique units. And it's fun, for me anyways, it's intrinsically fun to have two giant armies, and you position one army any way you want with the composition you have, and then you let them like automatically like just fight each other. And you can make small changes, you know, differences with the magic you can cast, but it's like, it's fun watching these Lord of the Rings epic battles with hundreds of units fighting hundreds of other units, and you're casting your shit in the fireballs and you're all that kind of crap in them. That's fun.
I have two complaints. One is that it doesn't let you pause.
It does.
It kind of does. If you hover over your spell, it pauses.
That's absolutely a pause.
No, but I want to be able to pause and like zoom in and look and like figure out what's going on in the map. Both of these complaints are related to like understanding what's happening through the battle. And the second is like, yeah, they give you an after action, like who did what damage, but it's not very well organized. So it's a pain to like figure out how did your damage occur? How did I win? Like what was performing well? What was underperforming? Like, it, and so the combination of the not being able to pause and like really like absorb what's going on and not having the perfect after action stuff makes it difficult to really understand like why did I win besides just having more units.
Did you want to replay?
Well,
replay would
be
fine. Replay would also be
okay. Did you ever do the skirmishes?
I did not.
Those were like the little puzzle thingies, right?
Those are straight battles.
They're just, yeah, they're puzzle battles. I mean, they're basically like, hey, here are like, you know, 3, 4, 5 different units you could select, and you'll have a certain number of points to assign, and you can choose any composition you want, given that limited amount of like points that you can assign.
It's like a chess tactics puzzle.
Yeah, exactly. And so you can say, oh, well, I want all of this one type, all archers. Oh no, they didn't have any melee to help them as soon as the enemy approached. Oh, maybe I want to have just some of this. And so you can like go through and like that's the skirmishes are supposed to be what teaches you that not only is it just like having a larger army that matters, but definitely it matters the composition, but also extremely matters how you position them on the battlefield, because you're able to position them initially, but also direct them in battle. So as soon as like, you know, you might have like for instance, on your half of the map, you could put everyone down at the very bottom left in this kind of semicircle waiting for the enemy to run into him. And then on the top left, way above there, you could have a bunch of melee chargers. And so you hit defend, they all stay in place. The enemy starts charging in because the archers are closer at the bottom. They run into them, but then you say attack. And then you have the top ones run down and get a flanking maneuver. And so it's that kind of like,
yeah, that's interesting. Cause you don't really learn that kind of stuff playing the main game though, which is interesting because the main game, the goal is to get to the point where you can click like auto complete battle, and it says that you lost 0 troops.
That's the sad thing. The auto
I have to keep doing these battles because I'm gaining more troops than I'm losing because I'm mind controlling like half their forces.
Yep.
But so that doesn't teach you how to win good. It's like, yeah, sure. If I roll up on like a fifth grader with my 5 NFL linebackers, like it doesn't teach me how to beat the Chicago Bears.
Well, I mean, the way this season's going, it likely could. I think like the skirmish puzzle thing is interesting. But I don't know. Like, I feel like I learned so much from just playing like just a straight matchup, just like a normal match, like not the tutorial, not the skirmish puzzle, just like jumping right into a game. I felt like that was like the best teacher moment for me, because it was like, all right, well, if I die, which will happen inevitably, I'll just re-roll the map, I'll re-roll a new hero and just see how it's different. And then it's like, okay, yeah, I can see how like all of the spells for this hero are totally different, all of the inventory items that you have that you pick up are totally different. Gosh, I like where to even go, because there's so much stuff to talk about in this game. I guess
there
like
are a lot of I picked up the DLC as well, so there's like 10 normal factions, and then there's another faction that's just like all of the other possible things, and within that faction each there's like 6 more sub factions. It's wild.
Oh dear.
So
it's also called Rogue Realms, so there we go. It's officially a roguelike. It's unquestionable.
Yeah, it's basically like, well, we swept up all of the units that were the ones you could just find on the map, and we turned them into more factions. Which is, I mean, it's nice, I guess, but it does like trigger something in me a little bit of like when games brag about how many factions they have and how they've got 500 spells. It's like,
Yeah, it's not necessarily a more is better scenario, but I did feel like, at least in this case, it felt like each kind of thing that I was playing with felt different enough that
Yeah,
it wasn't.
it did slim it. Like once, my biggest complaint, honestly, was not once I started the game. Once I started the game, it was fine that like the number of like options was manageable. It was which hero, which faction, which hero do I want to play for this game? I'm like, okay, I've got to look through basically like 200 possible options if I wanted to look at all the things. And it's
More.
like, I don't. And at the beginning, you're like, I don't know what I probably should be clicking random, because I don't know what I want. And you're like, well, I gotta read all the descriptions and blah blah blah, and it's an overwhelming amount of information.
Yep, that's a failure. That's a huge failure.
Like they should, I don't know if they should restrict you from playing other factions
They should.
off the bat, but they should say like, hey, if this is your first game or two, we strongly recommend you just to play with these couple.
It would be interesting, I think, if this game had so, like as the thin of a veneer of like any kind of narrative thrust to it whatsoever, versus just like here's a new StarCraft race go and like bludgeon each other for 30 minutes, like, and that's fun in and of itself, but I could see how like you start with the Minotaur hero in the Order faction, and your goal is to defeat the evil necromancer. I don't know, like your standard boilerplate fantasy kind of tropes. And you are pitted off against some other enemy faction, and by beating them, oh, now I've unlocked this other thing. I think like Slice and Dice does this very well. Another game that has just like a crap ton of stuff, just way too much stuff in it, but it gates it very well. In that it's not just giving you all of the tools right out the gate. It's like, here's, I'm just gonna like very, very nicely drip feed you content as you play it. And then you have something new the next time. You're like, okay, like now I know after like beating this boss, I can do this new strategy or something, or I have this new toy to play with. I can't wait to go and play with this new thing that I just unlocked. Which I will say, like, to this game's credit, there are things that you unlock specifically through like objective-based mechanics of like, unlock this hero for this faction by going and like mind controlling 10 enemy units or something. I'm like,
Yeah.
okay, like that's
Have 100,000 gold.
sure. Which is fine, but like I feel like the fact that it's just like a pure battle simulator for the most part maybe detracts against that a little bit. And that's like comparing it against, Slice and Dice, which literally is a pure battle simulator. It's like you are just going from one fight to the next, but I feel like there's some more kind of focused like thing that you're working towards. Like you are working towards the end final boss. There is no end final boss in this game. It's just the other player, and you beat all of their heroes and you conquer
There should be a
their.
campaign.
Well, no, notably with that, I do have a bullet point in here about why there's not a campaign.
Yeah, you interviewed the guy, right?
Huh?
Is it bull? Is it you interviewed the developer of this game, right?
No, not me. This was something that I pulled from an interview that I just found off of Google, but I mean, I can't be interrupting a clinical psychologist's time. I don't have that kind of money. One of the things they asked him was one of the main things, many things reviews point out is the lack of story campaign. Is that something that you intend to address in future updates? And the developer says, this is the inside scoop. We tried developing a campaign for the game and it went dreadfully. The campaign itself was actually okay, but it took a lot of work and energy. In December 2021, the decision was made to just pause the development of the campaign indefinitely. The campaign might still happen. Spoilers, it hasn't yet. There's a campaign editor, a map event editor, and a dialogue system in game. It's important to note that I do hear where the requests for getting a campaign are coming from, but I don't think I'm the right person to make one because, truth be told, I would only play the campaigns in Heroes of Might and Magic games when I was running out of things to do. For me, the game shined brightest when building a custom map, which I'm focusing on in my game. Story mode was never really a part of my vision for Heroes Hour because that vision was based on what I enjoyed.
I feel
So,
like the campaign
congrats.
would just be two maps in a row or one very tall map or something where it's not randomly generated and there's like some flavor text at the beginning, and rather than the guy that you're fighting at the end being running around, he's just sitting there waiting for you. Like that's all I want. It's like, here, play this one first. It's been like vetted so it's not all weird.
What I mean, when you say all weird, what the hell do you mean?
The very first the session that I played of this one, this game, the first one, like the map was broken. There was a section of the map that I could not get to, which
Well, that
meant
sounds like an
that
unusual outlier because most of the time, like the map generation is, even though there
horrible.
are random events and random, like, distances to all the different resources, all the resources are always present. All and then like the other events are randomly selected from pools, and so they all have a difficulty assigned to them to make it so that they fall on a gradient. They not all of them are like super easy, not all of them are super hard. In fact, they are all on the easy to impossible spectrum when you start, and so
Sure.
they're all very. I think they're the QA on that, at least from what I've seen, makes it such that you're getting pretty much not the same
I
experience,
think
but a
the
consistent.
campaign just being it's a normal game except there's give you a little bit of story, and it also then makes it so you always play the like normal ass knight humans first, so you get one game under your belt that you either try to win or don't win or whatever, and then it says go forth and play as all the weird monsters with psychic
Yeah.
eyeballs.
Nah, I can appreciate what the dev decided to do here.
Sure.
Because that whole principle of like design what you think is fun, that supersedes pretty much any argument that we could bring to the table here. If the dev thinks a certain game, even if we don't think it's fun, is fun, and they build the thing that they think is maximally fun, they have succeeded. It doesn't matter how we feel about it.
But what if some fat
What
jerk on
if,
the internet like me has a bad opinion on something and is clearly superior?
what if they want to make more money so they hire a second person who has a different opinion of what the game would be fun, and then they make way more money?
Well, I mean, in the
It depends on what you're trying
life
to
is
get
a
out of the
resource
game.
management game, and so like, do you need to have more money or do you have more fun? I mean, there's a lot of questions to be answered there, as
Well,
you're.
just I guess the real answer is whatever gives the most spreadsheets.
Oh my.
There you
Well,
go.
there you go. Yeah.
So
That's some
Excel.
true wisdom right there.
The
Will, did you
funnest game
ever
there's ever been made is Microsoft Office.
dabble with the multiplayer to this game at all?
No.
I
All
didn't even
right,
know there
moving
was
on.
one.
I can't imagine that being fun either. Like any game, like especially like Civ or like, because I've done multiplayer Civ, I've done multiplayer 4X, 4E.
Oh, multiplayer Civ's awful.
It's just a bunch of
So
like,
slow.
okay, I'm waiting for you to make all of your decisions.
Anytime someone else gets in a war, you're just like, oh my God, this is brutal.
Yeah, you just like you're incentivized to never like to be peaceful just so because you don't want to sit through the 1,000 years it takes to have a war. Yeah, so multiplayer in this game, I can't imagine that being any good.
I was tempted a couple times to rope both of you into like, let's just experiment to see what this thing is like. I can 100% see it being a total slog, but at the same time I'm
Nah,
like
that would have
weirdly
been
curious
whopping.
about
You
it. I
guys would
don't
be
know.
dead in the first week,
All
so
right,
no matter.
we'll pause the podcast here. We'll come back in 4 hours after one,
Four.
well, one turn of the
Oh,
game.
right.
Let's see. So we talked about all sorts of stuff. I guess like we didn't really talk much about the art style for this game. I think the art in this game is really good. What are your guys' thoughts?
I think it's pretty good. I think the music's good. The music is, well, good or just, it's very catchy. I definitely was like, it was just looping in my head a little bit last week. I don't know if it's great music, but it's definitely catchy. And I think the art, I don't know if it's like super great, but it's definitely works for what the game is. And I think it'd be hard for it to be like too much different just in terms of like the auto battler. You've got a lot of stuff on the screen. I don't know if you could get too much more detailed and have them still be like recognizable.
Yeah, I really like the kind of SNES aesthetic that it has going for it. And that, like, the different biomes, like, you have, like, little desert biomes, and you have, like, little desert trees, and, like, the little buildings in them feel very kind of thematic for those areas, or, like, winter zones are more kind of, like, foresty, green zones. It all feels, like,
When you're in the
very...
lava zone and you don't realize that if you start your units on the lava, they start catching on fire. It's like, what's happening? Oh God.
Classic tactical military blunder. I just I think it's worth shouting out the art is quite pleasant in this game. And I think that, like, the UI, for how much I was clowning on it earlier, fairly functional. I feel like there were times where I was like, God, this is, like, way too busy. And then after, like, winning a game, I was like, okay, I get it. I see how, like, where everything is and why it's there. And that felt kind of, like, good to kind of cross that barrier at the very least. There was I did find it very comical on the map that I was playing, which was, like, I'm on one side, on a whole continent to myself on one side, enemies on a whole continent to themselves on the other side, 20 minutes, no rush kind of deal. Water in the middle. I get on a boat and I'm, like, encountering another boat enemy, and it goes into, like, this side by side, like, Master and Commander style, like, boat battle, where, like, all of my hydras and, like, giant, like, dragons and stuff are on one boat, and it's just, like, the boat's coming into the other boat, and then it's just, like, a giant boat siege. And I thought that was very, very clever and cute and fun.
It is fun. Like, I feel like most of the time you water battles don't work like that in games. And it's fun that they did, like, and it works well and interesting. And there's, like, things that happen differently if you fight on water.
What else? We talked about hero abilities, tech trees. Is there anything else that we want to cover before rating time?
I'm waiting for something to occur to me here, but I think we've covered a lot of what there is in this game.
I think we got it all.
I mean,
Okay,
yeah,
yeah.
I mean, the fact that there are over 300 unique units, and just to talk about the art, like, 300 units, and all 300 of them have actions for attacking, for being hit, for dying, and so, and then that's all stuff that's,
And they're
I
not just clones of each other. It's not like there's the red worm and the blue worm and the yellow worm. It's like most of them are legitimately different art assets.
Yeah, it's surprising that they were able to come up with that many types of monsters, to be honest. I have a separate tracker because I'm this is the kind of person I am. I think it was over, like, 15 trillion different, like, unique combinations of monster names. And, like, when I looked at, like, the core set, because it's like the blank blank of blank, there's, like, a set, like, sort of, like, formulation for, like, what the titles of these
It's
monsters
the
are.
Diablo formula.
Yeah, the Diablo, exactly. And I remember adding a bunch of this person's, like, the units from this person's, or the devs' monsters to this list because they were unique and they were interesting. And I thought it was really cool that they were able to come up with that many that were that unique.
Yeah, they did a good job. And, like, the factions are they do a pretty good job of having, like, genuinely different feels to them. And, like, good unit sets, all that stuff.
Yeah,
You play from one to the other. It's
there's
like,
13 different factions that vary from the, what was the one that I played with? I played with the Lament faction, a subterranean faction composed of troglodytes, gorgons, I'd read that instead of grogpod for a second, and beholders led by shadowmancers and dragons. And the hero skills are shadow cloning and shadow casting, unique buildings, slave pens, idol of shadows, monolith, and dragon temple. And, like, compared to the tutorial things that I was playing with, I was like, this is a lot more fun. This was, like, very interesting, and it made me motivated to, like, try to check out some of the other ones, which are, like, there's the Decay faction, who a faction of the dead who act with one goal, to spread even more death. Like, that's great. Like, give me more of that stuff. Like,
our pet is the elves.
Oh, those classic elves.
They felt more like weird wood tree elves than Lord of the Rings elves.
Sorcerers, you gotta ma anything that's magic based is gonna be a huge boon for the player, because magic is the one thing in this game where you have to actually, like, declare, I'm going to use this spell at this time. And so anything that was magic based was a huge benefit to the player. NPCs suck, basically.
Shall we score?
Yeah, I'm gonna use my magic abilities here to summon Colin to kick us off here.
All right, I will kick us off. I gave this game, Heroes Hour, a 6.8.
Ooh, hiss, hiss, boo.
I mean, like, don't get me wrong. I still, like, between the first time I played it and now, I've put 30 hours into it. So it's not like I have not played it. And I definitely felt a pretty strong one more turn aspect of it. Like, once you're in it, you get sucked in. But unlike Will, I did a lot of playing, and I'm like, at the end of it, I'm like, did I have fun? I was engaged. I was very engaged, but I don't know if I had fun while I was doing it. Like, it felt a little bit mindless in some aspects of it.
Let me ask you this. How many spreadsheets did you make?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's my problem. I didn't make any
there's your
spreadsheets.
Problem right there.
They need to. Okay, so if they really want to get a 10 out of 10 from me, they need to integrate the spreadsheets into the game itself. No, but like I didn't really enjoy the intro puzzle bit. Like, just figuring out how to go from, you know, got the guy that's got 100 power to 200 power to 300 power to 400 power, and like how to map that across, and like do the traveling salesman problem of like, how are you going to like order all of your turns. It felt kind of slow and grindy. And I think I liked it more the first time I played it, and then the second time I played it, it was like, oh right, this is why I didn't really like it. I got one win under my belt playing the second time, and I was like, I tried to play a second game, and I was like, this isn't fun. I wanted to skip to the part where I was like trying to compete with the bad guys, but like that part I felt better, but it takes a long time to get there, and it takes. And by the time you get there, it's the game has gotten some, like, the choices get weird. It's like so much of your effort has already been spent. You're either ahead of them or behind them, and you might be able to win based off your cleverness, but you won't be able to like outpace them through strategy. So I don't know. It was, I think I still do recommend people play this game. It is good for what it is, but I don't think I can. I don't think it has much more replayability for me after this.
I'll go next. I'm going to give this game a 6.9, nestled right next between Kingdom New Lands and Dysomancer. Let's see. I'll start with I think my bads are just kind of like nitpicks. The tutorial is objectively bad, though. At least for me, I don't know. Like, the tutorial was like an actively detracting experience from like having fun and learning the game, it felt like. Maybe it's a me problem. There's a lot of systems in this game potentially to its detriment. Maybe again, this is a new kind of player experience sort of thing, but like learning like all of like the traveling salesman problem, initial early game, like roving enemy factions, like your hero management, your building management stuff felt a little overwhelming. I feel like they could have dialed that back a little bit. I think the in-game like encyclopedia thing is good that it's there, because the wiki is terrible for this game, and for something with so much content, being able to kind of like have a third-party reference to look up stuff would have been nice. I guess it's not really that big of a deal though, for how much we complain about other like wiki games, but I feel like there's some kind of lack of thrust or like motivation. Like, why do I care about this faction? And maybe it's a moot point, but like, why should I pick this one over that one when I can just pick the same one over like the same time over and over and over again? But I think the goods here are pretty good. I think the art design is fun and charming. This feels like like Realm of the Mad God, but like in a good way. Like if they designed like an actual good game. The art is very cute and silly, but also feels like very impactful. Like, you know, your hero runs around on like this little pony, but like, and it looks very cute and Super Nintendo style, but like the dragons and other enemies that like are very big and imposing, like make you feel like you have to stop and pause and think for a second of like, oh, this means business. And I think that like once you grok the systems, there's a lot of interesting takeaways from it of like, how to balance your economy and like what units that I want to get to like counter the enemy, that kind of stuff. The gigantic battle system I thought was very silly and fun. I basically just wanted a bowl of popcorn next to me to just watch this Lord of the Rings style combat unfold. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. I do have these spells and stuff to use. I guess I'll do those. And there's like quite an interesting active mod scene for this game that I was just perusing a second ago, but there are things like Warhammer 40K mods. There's like Halo factions that you can put in there. There's all sorts of fun stuff that people have come up with, which is neat. So it's a 6.9 for me. I think like it's this game is really good for some people. It's maybe not like the best game for me per se, but it's probably a game for Will.
I mean, that seems about right. I did select this game, and I gave it a rating in 2022 of 8.5. I would have taken that rating and reduced it. And in fact, I did, but then I didn't because I'm realizing I have to stick with that first rating. I believe the Will from 3 years ago, simply because I know, I mean, I've racked up, about something over 80 hours at this point. And the fact that I have, what did you say, a 10-tab spreadsheet, and I went through and I did a lot of manual transcription of data. I did a lot of analyses around what the optimal play style is, and lots of notes through several different play through runs about like discovering, oh yeah, the bodyguard one, that's the best, and so on and so forth. That was all just, that's, it's like, you know what it is? I want to be dropped into an alien world where I have no idea how that civilization works, how that culture works. And I have to just completely figure it out from scratch and get it wrong a lot of the times, but then, you know, learn from those mistakes. And like that idea of just being unable to understand any of the systems and being completely confused and being able to build models about like how things work and to solve it, that's what makes it worthwhile. And I think that the only reason that works is because the wiki for this is almost non-existent. If the wiki existed for this game, I would give it a much lower rating. Which sounds like a very
direct opposite
critique. Yeah, it sounds like a very strange thing to say. But that's how I feel about it. And so I think if I was going to rate it again, I mean, I was able to play one game where I was hooked in this recent session. And then every other game, as I mentioned before we started talking, is that, yeah, I would get almost to the point of leaving the initial area and I would just be bored. I'd be bored out of my mind. I already know what's going to happen. I can already see all of how the game is going to play out, and I'm just bored immediately. And so I don't make it through more than an hour when I start now. And so I don't know what that's all about. That seems like a me problem, but it also just seems like it's indicative of the fact that once a puzzle is solved, it's just not interesting anymore. The novelty is it evaporates, like I said. So 8.5 though, if you have never played this game and you like to solve complex problems, this is a very complex problem to solve, because once you beat this game at its highest level, which is my goal, once you do that, you feel like a god, and then it immediately becomes boring. So I say play it through and beat it at this high level. If you can beat it at the high level, that's everything.
And lo, Alexander wept, for there were no more magical homunculi to conquer.
And that's how it feels, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah, so some similar games that I was trudging up to this. It's again, this is another case where like this game is very unique in all of its systems and stuff. So none of these are really like super similar, but maybe you can kind of squint your eyes and kind of get what I'm getting at here. But like the Heroes of Might and Magic series, so like maybe some 4X games to start with. Heroes of Might and Magic 2 and 3, although the developer did say that it was more inspired by Heroes of Might and Magic 5. There's a 4X, I guess it's a 4X game that's maybe roguey to some degree that 100 years from now will come to Steam eventually, but it's on its own webpage called Star Sector. I don't know, Colin, if you've heard of this one, but it's like a space, it's like an elite style space exploration sort of 4X-ish game. There's the Conquest of Elysium series that feels like kind of similar to this, with just like massive battles, like way too many factions to pick from. Now, from a roguey perspective, there's like games that are weirdly on the more traditional end of the spectrum and games that are not. So the more traditional ones that kind of are sort of like this, by the Cogmine developer, he made a game called X@com, which is like an XCOM ASCII roguelike game, which it seems very interesting. There's Spirits RL, there's StarCraft colon Rogue Mercenaries, which is another developed in a week ASCII style squad management game. We talked a little bit about our previous episode, War Sim, The Realm of Islona. I think that fits the bill here for similarity. When we were talking about like puzzle optimization and like doing like only taking the easy battle traveling salesman problem, that is Desktop Dungeons to a T. That is the game for that. They came out with a remake or a remaster somewhat recently that was, I don't know, like the original one is very clean, but Crying Suns is another kind of 4X roguey style game that's very far future space oriented. The developer for that is coming out with a Battlestar Galactica version of it, which looks very interesting to say the least. People have like requested us to look at the game Bionic Dues, which is also somewhat, I guess, squad managey. There's Keeper RL, recently released Soul Ash 2, and maybe one that's like very roguey and very 4X-y is one called just straight up Rogue Hex, that I think is supposed to be sort of splitting the difference between traditional roguelikes and Civ, whatever that means. So give those what was it, like 15 games a look-see. Maybe one of them will be similar to this, I don't know. But that will wind down our Heroes Hour episode, which only took us a little bit more than an hour. And yeah, as we wind down here, you can send in your emails to grogpodzone@gmail.com. I've been getting some review copies for games, which we get them, we see them. Whether or not if we can fit them into the schedule, we'll figure it out. But I will definitely give those a shout out on our Mastodon. Hey, kids, remember Mastodon? Grogpod@gamedev.place. I've been meaning to put some more micro review things up on there, but our website with all of that stuff and more funsies, ratings, reviews, etc. Grogpod.zone, the website, your one-stop shop. Find it there. Yeah, that's our Heroes Hour episode. And I crucially forgot to do a parody of Andrew's bit of, oh my god, they changed the rating system again. Ugh.
Oh my god, we almost didn't mention Slay the Spire.
Hey, there we go. That counts.
Wow. Big mistake.
I don't think it does.
There's got to be some kind of spire-looking building in the game, right?
No, I think we forgot to organically fit it in there. This is truly a curse episode.
Oh no. It's the oversight. We're gonna get our podcast license revoked now
Well,
because
next time Andrew will be back, and so we'll get back on track.
But yeah, Andrew will return next episode with his pick, which is Dead Zone Rogue. Which I always wanna say Deathblow, but no, it's Dead Zone, which recently I think it 1.0'd this year. Looks fun. It looks like a very kind of FPS. This is the FPS meatheadness that he was talking about. Lots of big flashy graphics. I believe it's supposed to have an interesting online co-op component? Question mark? That maybe I can trick the rest of the crew into finally doing. Because we all love fast pace first person shooter.
It's a bullet sponge game. They're just creatures you just pump bullet. You know what? You know,
I want to kill them.
I
I see
mean,
the number get bigger.
yeah.
All right, all right.
Number get bigger. Yeah, Dead Zone Rogue will be our next episode. But to play us out from here, will be some Beats of the Necromancers for the Decay faction from Heroes Hour. Thank you.